Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday morning. It is the 11th of March, and very, very nice to have you with us. It's it's getting to be summer. We have daylight savings time, right? So
spring ahead.
It's spring ahead.
You lose an hour.
You fall back.
Spring forward, fall back.
So we spring forward. So we lose an hour.
If this only weekend? That could have happened at 9 o'clock this morning. You know.
Well, but if we spring forward, we lose an hour.
Right? Yeah, right.
We do lose an hour.
Right. I think that's Ray's point.
So instead of getting up at 1:30, I'll get up at 12:30.
That's true.
Man, live a little.
Good morning, all. Welcome. We have a lovely panel this morning.
Ray.
Let me introduce them to you, and then we'll get into the topics that we want to discuss. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I made a mistake on the air this morning, for which I have to apologize very quickly.
What was that?
What happened?
I was giving my commentary, and I had just read the Times, and they had been giving all kinds of credit to Cruz for having command of the facts. But I said Trump.
In passing.
So it was a dumb thing. Nobody has called me on it, but I thought I would confess before somebody
had. Mea culpa.
Well,
good for you.
I think I was telling you earlier that I was noticing several times during the debate where they were meant to say one candidate and they said another. When you get all those names, it gets confusing.
One other thing very quickly, and that is that tonight, of course, is the great Happy Trail at the Linda Norris Auditorium. Go to the Linda.org.
Linda.org.
But it's free.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's free.
That's nice.
Yeah, so it's the Empire State Egg. People are being very nice to us and sponsoring this, as I understand it.
Peter Lesser.
That's
and the
correct,
egg.
And they'll be there.
Oh, that's great.
Why did they just do it at the Egg then?
I don't know. Maybe
well, we partner with coming. Them yeah. often and
okay.
do different things. And
maybe
they've been
ask.
Very helpful. They're wonderful people.
We have relationships with all these folks.
Fine.
They're wonderful. Okay, so 7:30, but you got to reserve. So you have to go on to
thelinda.org. Thelinda.org.
Now, if you show up and the place isn't filled, you'll probably get in. But you don't want to count on that.
That's right.
It's a big fight Roselle and I always have about our reservations. You don't need reservations. I say, yes, you do.
Yeah, you always sort of need reservations. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't, you know, you should go over and just buy one of those little signs that says reserved and put it on a table earlier.
It's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think so. Sunday, Sophia Loren is at Proctor's.
Oh, and boy, and you're going to be the interviewer.
And I'm going to do the interview with Sophia Loren. So that's proctors.org. That's Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. So
that's
if you want to
great.
See Sophia Loren, you can
Who
check
wouldn't?
That out. And we're going to we'll have an interview with her tomorrow in the Midday Magazine.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, like a pre-interview. Where
Practice, kind of a run-through.
Yeah, pretty much. I'll give you a hint. She doesn't know what we're going to do.
Really?
Apparently she hasn't had a production meeting yet, so that'll be an interesting day.
Okay, well, I'm sure it'll be fun. How can you lose? Just stand there.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't have to do much.
How young is she now?
She's 81 years old.
Wow.
81 years old. So all that is very cool. Well, we didn't get to introduce Ray Graff.
No.
Hi, Raymond.
Oh, no.
How are you?
I'm here.
Very nice, as always, to have you here.
I saw my shadow, so there'll be another hour of roundtable.
It must be quite a shadow.
And Barbara Smith, who is an author and an activist and an organizer, and she joins us this morning as she does each and every Friday morning. Good morning.
Hi, everybody.
Very nice to have you here. So let us talk about what is happening in this world of ours. There was a debate last night, which is being called substantive by the New York Times. It was called elegant by Donald Trump.
Elegant.
Which I believe, compared to the other Republican contests, means that nobody received a wedgie.
Yeah. It wasn't Shakespeare in the Park. Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, there was a sports analogy in the paper, in one of the tabs this morning, saying that all he had to do was run out the clock.
Yes.
Which is interesting. In other words, he didn't have to attack because he's so far ahead, and the only thing he could do is screw it up.
Right.
Don't you see?
Yes. And
he's not that far ahead in Florida, by the way.
No, and Rubio, Marco Rubio, seemed to have had a pretty good night last night.
It was a good night for Rubio.
It was a good night for Rubio. He was on his home turf, And it was one of those few debates that was actually in somebody's home turf, and you could tell that the hometown crowd was out. Now, whether that means anything and people will actually be there for him when it comes to you know, actually
voting.
Showing up to vote, right, the democracy part.
That little thing.
We shall see.
It's called the Michigan thing, right? Isn't that what happened in Michigan? People expected one thing, kind of.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, in both cases. I mean, I think John Kasich was expecting a much larger turnout. Marco Rubio, certainly. And then, obviously, there was the Bernie Sanders over Hillary Clinton result in Michigan. So there was that. Did anybody have any insight into the debate and what it means? And
did anybody watch?
I did.
I did.
Okay, Ray, let's take it away.
Well, I'll just go with what the National Review said today.
That liberal bastion.
No, but listen, they've hit the nail on the head. All three of Trump's course. Rivals initially let the businessman's gauzy responses to detailed questions go unchallenged, and there was a lot of that going around.
There was a lot of that going on, and it seemed that only, and I guess this is somewhat expected, only Ted Cruz was ready to kind of pounce on some of the things that he said. But in comparison to other debates, it was relatively tame. And but as far as the actual substance, that Trump thing, which seems to be working very well for him, is to say a lot of words but not a lot of detail as to what he's going to do.
You know, in the Coliseum, this would have been a very unacceptable debate because there wasn't enough blood.
Yeah.
You know, and the Romans sitting around would have gone, you know, thumbs down.
Well, there's not a great deal of blood in the Democratic debates.
No, there's intellectual blood there. It's called IP, intellectual plasma.
Ah, see, I didn't know that.
Now you know.
Now I know.
I am curious as to whether, even Donald Trump said this tonight, one thing I agreed with him on last night, which is that we seem to be debated out, don't we? I guess they're calling for two more. Whether that's necessary or not, I don't know. But it is. It does seem like
the loser always wants more.
Yeah,
and the behind person, you know, the behind person is another name for that. But the person who is behind
the loser, the trailer.
The person who's behind.
I know what you're doing, and you know what? It's offensive.
You find it offensive?
Yes, I find it offensive.
Sure you do.
The most interesting part about last night was they questioned each candidate about whether. If there is not the 1,200, whatever the 1,200 delegate number is need, if somebody doesn't reach that number, are they all okay with going with the person who has the most?
No, they are certainly not.
What did they say?
Well,
what
Trump
is the National Review
requirement.
Say?
Trump said the requirement that the nominee amass that number is just an arbitrary number set by the RNC, and so he's already setting it up for a fight. Should he be leading but not have the 1,200, he's setting it up for a fight. Now, Cruz also said it would be a disaster to have an open convention if nobody reaches that.
Well, it's the right thing for him to say, because what he's really saying is vote for me, and then we won't have that problem. Don't you see?
Yeah, but yeah. I think what Trump said is more ominous, as he's more likely to have more delegates, but maybe not that number.
I think what he's really saying is bring it on. I think that's what he's really saying. Bring it on.
We are going to take a quick break. When we
show
come
me
back,
what you got.
I want to talk about some other issues with the panel, and we welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. The purest distillation of the nation's wars over voting rules and legislative gerrymandering is playing out in North Carolina, according to the New York Times. A high-profile lawsuit is taking on a voter identification law and other voting changes. There are four other suits challenging North Carolina's congressional or state legislative districts on racial grounds. Three more allege unconstitutional gerrymandering on local races. And on March 4th, a new law changing how judges are elected was struck down by a three-judge state panel. There's a lot to this story. I'm reading from the New York Times, and if you get a chance to look at some of their mapping and look at they spell it out pretty good as to what's happening versus the changes and the proposed changes. Barbara, what do you make of this?
I just wanted to make sure that our listeners knew about this aspect of this presidential cycle. We talk all the time about the candidates and their behavior and shenanigans, but I think this is just a much more serious issue of because of what the Supreme Court decided in 2013 about getting rid of, Section 4.
Explain Section 4 because people may not know what that is.
Section 4 was preclearance. Was that the preclearance or was that the...
But just in general... terms.
The thing is, there was a set of states that when the Voting Rights Act was first passed, that because of their historical disenfranchisement of primarily black voters, they had to do something called preclearance. And that meant
with the Justice Department.
Yes, and that meant that even if they were changing something like the address of a polling place, they had to check with the feds.
And along came our marvelous Supreme Court and said, forget about a check.
That's correct.
We don't have prejudice anymore. It's all
gone.
Well,
that was John Roberts, you know, he talked about how that's kind of in our rearview mirror.
Yeah.
So,
we don't have that anymore.
You know, that was a basis. And because, as I've often said on our show, that there's such an accurate understanding of like how institutionalized racism works itself out and plays itself out in our society, that's what makes it possible for the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to actually believe that racism, you know, is not really, or racial issues
it's
and
only
racial
in the
discrimination
rear view
are
mirror.
Not really a factor
right.
in voting or much of anything else, I take it.
Which, by the way, is one of the reasons why this business of who gets to appoint the justices on the Supreme Court is so important.
Critical.
Yeah, number one. But I want to go back to Judge Felix Frankfurter.
Yes.
Perhaps you all remember him?
I do.
Yeah, Judge Felix Frankfurter was a judge who decided the original gerrymandering, well, not the original gerrymandering case, but a gerrymandering case and says, this is up to the legislature. We have to stay out of the political thicket and let them do whatever they want. Except, says the court, in the case of racially motivated, so that the only time you can object really to a gerrymander is when it is done specifically to disenfranchise people of color, for example. And so that certainly is what you're talking about here. And
right.
You're right.
And in this article, they're talking about how they have drawn district lines in North Carolina so that Republicans have the advantage, so that, you know, 51% of people vote for Democrats, and yet 7 out of 9 or like that.
So you would think after, 230 years as a country, that we would sort of have voting down by now? Like, we would figure out how to do that. But when voters go to the polls in North Carolina primaries on Tuesday, any votes for congressional candidates will not count because a federal panel throughout the state's congressional map in February, a separate congressional primary will now be held.
That's cool. Let us not only point the finger at North Carolina. In fact, in this state, New York, where we sit right now, the judges, of course, did the congressional thing because the Democrats and the Republicans couldn't agree on the districting. But in the state legislature, we allow these people to draw their own lines. And in fact, if you haven't ever heard me say this before, when Andrew Cuomo ran for office the first time, he ran on that plank that this is disgraceful. We're not going to allow this to happen anymore. I will not sign that gerrymander bill. But when he came into office, he did.
We are we're going to take a break. And this, by the way, there's breaking news in that we knew this was coming. But there was a Ben Carson has endorsed Donald Trump. He just endorsed him just a few moments ago.
Yeah, he did.
12 more votes for Trump.
You stole my line.
Oh, sorry.
I used on my early commentary this morning.
Ray is on fire today.
I apologize.
If Pataki had endorsed him, it would have been 5 more votes.
So let me ask you the question, Alan, in the minute that we have left.
Right.
This guy, Ben Carson, was polling really high at one point. So he lost votes a long time ago.
Yes,
where did those
did.
Votes go? Did those votes already go to Trump?
I don't know. I don't know who they went to. I don't know that they went to Trump. No, I think they probably went to Cruz. And the interesting subplot of this story right now is that Cruz is the natural heir to some of the evangelical stuff from how you say it, Carson. So, but instead, he's going for Trump. That's very interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, it is interesting, and Donald Trump now is holding a press conference and commenting on the violence at rallies, which was, of course, an issue that was brought up during the debate last night, and saying that we need a little bit more of the audience swinging back.
Yeah, I got to get
really.
Me.
Yeah, that's what he's saying in the press conference.
Yes,
well, we don't know if he's saying that now.
No, yeah, he's saying that right now.
Okay, yeah.
I gotta get me a wig. You know, like the ones that Donald Trump that people are wearing now.
Like the
coonskin hats in the old days.
Now they have
Trump wigs.
Why do you want to look like that?
Yeah. I don't know. Just things. I think
an Alexander Hamilton wig would look better.
Thing to do.
Powder it up and
exactly.
go on out.
We
right.
powder up before the show.
Who says we don't already?
All right.
Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, Barbara Smith making up the panel this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. BBC News, and then we'll be back. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to the panel discussion. And we are very happy to have you back. We're going to get to letters in just a second. Quick note, because we were talking about North Carolina, but the president of the North Carolina NAACP, the Reverend William Barber, will be in town.
That's correct. Yes. And I just want to make sure that if our listeners are interested in the topic of voter suppression and all kinds of other things that are going on, both in the state of North Carolina and nationally, that'll be a marvelous evening, I think.
March 30th, it's the Martin Luther King Lecture Series at Siena College in Loudonville, New York, and that is March 30th, and he'll be on our program on the 22nd.
Right, and it's free.
Yeah, it is free. All right. Alan, you have letters.
Cody writes, good morning, panel. Last night's debate was certainly more sedate than Trump's usual loud and bombastic persona suppressed, showing he knows he will be the nominee and that he is to ready himself for the general election. Due to the electorate's very short-term memory, he can act like a grown-up from now on. And this is going to be a tough word. We might very well have our first orangutan. Orangutan, but not spelled that way, right?
Well, I think it's close.
Close, but not there. Orangutan. I think the point is that his hair is orange.
I see.
Don't you see? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And Joni says, didn't Trump promise to destroy the Department of Education debate last night and then put Ben Carson in charge of education?
He did say that. That is a frightening thought.
Well,
why in the world would you think that someone like him, well with his points of view, but also he's not an educator. He was a neurosurgeon just because he benefited highly from an excellent education and obviously believes in education doesn't mean that he's in a position to set educational policy, I don't believe.
Well, that's correct. However, as my mom would have said, they're all doing it now. You know, you're putting people into positions running lawyers, Joel Klein in New York.
Right.
The president of various SUNY branches being appointed for what I suspect are political reasons. And so this would not be the first. And I think that the reason you want him in charge, if you're Trump, is that he is promising basically to do away with it.
Right. That's right.
You see what I mean? Don't you see?
More?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'll do that.
All right.
Okay. And then we heard from somebody, April, who said, good morning, Roundtable. This is a lighthearted note this morning. I just wanted to welcome Barbara Smith to the Friday morning Roundtable. She always adds a ray of sunshine to the Friday program. Good to see her. Happy weekend to all. And that's from April.
My favorite panelist.
A ray of sunshine.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
So she got you then there, too.
Okay.
I'm hardly sunshine.
And Marcia says, for your information, Joe, 240 years since 1776, laughing out loud, LOL.
Laughing at your idiocy, sir.
So what is it?
No, I don't think. You were just...
You didn't. You said 230. I mean, 230, 240, whatever.
I'm not good at math.
Hey, it's a long time.
I think I said or such. But anyway,
we're not going to hold it against you.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
And Bob says, gerrymandering is probably the worst threat to American democracy that exists. It deprives citizens of their voting power and all but guarantees that whichever party, draws the map, wins the election. With the upcoming change in the Supreme Court, there is at last a chance that the whole concept of gerrymandering, not just a specific instance in North Carolina, will be found unconstitutional. Wouldn't that be great? I think he makes a very good point there. What Trump said about achieving the number of electoral votes needed, It's from David. This quote, taken from CNN's website a few moments ago, documents what I remember Donald Trump saying last night during the debate. Quote, "I think that whoever gets the most delegates should win." He also called the 1,237 majority needed to clinch the nomination, quote, "a random number that somebody set."
Yeah, I referenced that. Yeah, we talked about it.
You did. And then Michael says, "Ben Carson would make an excellent director of NASA. Get it? Out of space." That's what he said.
"All right.
A dear panel," says Ozone Pete, "it would behoove us to remember that although Cruz, real first name Raphael, presented himself as an outsider, he was on Bush's 2000 recount team in Florida. He was looking for an advisory position in Bush's administration, but apparently rubbed too many the wrong way. W called him Theodore. Look at the records." Pete from Toland. Okay. Yes. And Barbara says,
That's not ours.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ray, for reading over my shoulder.
Happy to help.
You know, you are a good guy. You've always protected my interests and imbecilities. Okay.
You do.
You're a good man. Bill in Great Barrington, isn't it actually the media that wants more debates? Not me.
Well, it is good for ratings. And Trump brought that up last night.
He did. Yeah. Yes, he did.
I must have missed that, probably because I was sleeping. Remember when I said that I would get up at 12:30 instead of 1:30?
Yeah.
Somebody wrote and said, if you wake up at the same time, it'll be 2:30. Bedtime will be 8:30. I'm not quite sure.
This is about daylight savings time.
Yeah, and it's different if it's 230 or 240 years ago.
Exactly.
Well, we have a very brilliant group.
Our listeners are very specific this morning.
Get your facts straight, people. Come on.
Good morning, stalwart knights of the round table.
Squares of the round table.
Trump is the most convincing of con men, a narcissist who believes in himself utterly. Friedman asks, what is to stop him from moving to the center in the general election? This is the typical nominee move, but in this case, Trump will do it better than anyone else. Shape shifting is his specialty, and there are many more millions of marks in the middle. Alliterative, but terrifying. That's from Scott. All right. And I think that's it.
Huzzah. That is it.
That seems to be it.
So let's go back to...
Although there's a deal at Men's Warehouse.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, what do they got going on?
Buy one, get one.
All that. Let's go back to the issues of the day and what is happening. Let me bring this up. The other thing that we wanted to talk about, besides the Ben Carson endorsement, which we mentioned just before the break. The other story is, the Canadian Prime Minister was in town last night.
Yeah.
And that was...
he wowed him.
He sure did. That was quite a deal. And there was a lot going on. Mr. Trudeau toasted the two nations as siblings at the state dinner. Mr. Obama raised his glass at the White House to the Great Alliance and joked about Mr. Trudeau's previous jobs. If things get out of hand, remember the prime minister used to work as a bouncer, said the president.
Serve him well in parliament.
And in a joking reference to Canadian-born presidential candidate Ted Cruz, Mr. Obama said, where else could a boy from be born in Calgary and run for the presidency of the United States?
Well played.
Yes.
Great.
What does this say, do you think, about, because one of the prime minister has been asked repeatedly prior to his visit, but certainly it has intensified during his visit, that he is often referred to as the anti-Trump. So now when he is on, he's been dodging this question. He hasn't answered this question. He hasn't gotten into the fray at all. But it does, when you see a man who is this popular, who obviously has polar opposite views and is very progressive, what does that say?
Well, there are a couple of answers to that.
Yes.
One may be that the White House told him to shut up. That it would not be great to have a cheap electoral debate, you know, going when you have something this stately. The other is that sooner or later, and now I know there'll be mail on this, Trump may be the president of the United States, and you might have to deal with him.
So, yeah, keep your shots to a minimum. The other thing that I would just like to point out, while all of this is happening on the Democratic, and I got to bring up the numbers here, but which I had.
Let's get them right, please.
But I want to get them right.
what numbers?
Very much about math. While all of this is happening, the president's popularity, his approval rating is really going very high. And I think that's something
exactly.
that we're missing, that every night we're talking about these, 13 debates that have taken place over the last half a year or so. And the president has just been, you know.
Excoriated
is mm-hmm. an excellent word. And yet the popularity in the country seems to be very high.
Has anybody ever done a study, I wonder, about presidential approval ratings and the price of gas? In other words, it's very low.
I don't know, but it's going up now, right?
Is a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. The president's approval rating is now over 50%.
Well, that's good. The higher it goes, the more likely it will be that when the actual election comes on, that the president will be out there endorsing either Hillary or Bernie, I'm reasonably sure.
Yes.
And therefore, his increased popularity will probably help that endorsement.
Yep, a 3-year high for the president of the United States. And again, you know, for somebody who's been beaten up so much over the last, over the last 8 years, but over the last several months in the election cycle, it is, it's an interesting phenomenon.
Was it Cruz who said that he has governed like an emperor?
Cruz, I find Cruz very interesting in his debates. He was doing it especially last night, but he does this a lot where it seems like he's running against Obama more than he is any of the other people on
people,
the stage.
People are calling that.
Or Hillary Clinton, but I mean, or Bernie Sanders.
Go back to when President Obama first ran. Everybody was running not against whoever the nominee was. Dole? Who was it back then?
Who ran against
McCain?
That was
McCain.
Yes.
They were running against Bush. They weren't running against McCain. They were doing their best to tie McCain to Bush, and it was really an indictment of Bush, the 8 years of Bush.
No, that's true.
So, I mean, that's standard operating procedure politically.
Well, yeah. I think he's I think the president, like all presidents, gets more popular. When Bill Clinton left office with all his troubles, he was zenith. I mean, it was unbelievable where he was. In fact, I think at the time that he left the presidency, he was the most popular president in the history of this country.
Since polling began.
In the 212 years the country has been around.
Right.
Just to put this into perspective, at this time, in President Clinton's exit, his last year in office, he had a 63% approval rating.
Think about that.
And with 10 months to go in office, President Obama, as I mentioned, had 50%, roughly the same as Ronald Reagan's in March of 1988.
Yeah.
So clearly, Clinton's high popularity, high approval ratings at that time didn't lead to another Democratic president.
Right.
True
That's
enough.
Very true. And
but he did have Monica. That helped him.
But didn't Gore sort of distance himself?
Yes, he did.
Well,
is
one of
that
Alan
so
Alan's
stupid.
Best rant. Is that
I mean, of all the reasons that Gore proved himself to be
dummy?
Yeah, something like that. I was going to say something worse.
I know you were.
The idea that he would run against Clinton basically by not invoking him when he was so popular at the time just really is so off-putting for me. I mean, I can never quite forgive him for that one.
And just to your point, Ray, too, about running against Bush 8 years ago, but the Republicans were also running against him. His approval rating was 32% at the time. So he had not only had the candidates, you not only have your own, you know, your own party, because they also distanced themselves.
Yeah, it depends on who the other guy is.
That's right. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back and continue our conversation. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Center for Better Hearing, Glens Falls, New York. Doctors Susan Boscia and Cara Bedore, providing comprehensive hearing and hearing aid services, hearingbest.com. The Montessori School of the Berkshires, sponsoring a community presentation, The Emotional Life of Children, tonight at 6 p.m., berkshiremontessori.org/speaker. And Amtrak, announcing the Amtrak Weekend Getaway Package for round trips Thursday through Mondays between New York City and Montreal through April 28th. Some blackout dates apply. Amtrak.com for advance reservations.
Dexter Gordon on set.
Yeah, sure, Tenorman Deluxe.
I didn't know that. Ask Rob Chacon,
our
music meister. Yes.
I just filled them in. They heard the tail end of that.
Oh, yeah. So good.
Years ago, my brother took all the pads off his saxophone.
Yeah.
Never put them back.
Really?
No. Could never play it again.
You learned so much on this program.
That was Dexter Gordon during the break.
It was Dexter Gordon in the bumper music. Yeah, Rob Chacon doing a great job. Yeah.
Okay, let us also move on to other things that we want to talk about. Who wants to tackle Apple and the FBI? So this is the privacy fight has been turned up a notch. The Obama administration argued on Thursday that, quote, no single corporation, even one as successful as Apple, should be allowed to flout the rule of law by refusing to help the FBI unlock the iPhone used by one of the San Bernardino, California attackers. The administration's sharp tone in a new court filing drew an angry and emotional rebuke from lawyers for Apple, who accused the government of a cheap shot and were particularly upset about what they said was an unfair and inaccurate suggestion that the company has a special relationship with China to protect its corporate interests there. Mm. The tone of the brief reads like an indictment, according to Apple's chief general counsel.
And Apple crying foul. I guess this has to do with the All Writs Act of 1789 that the feds are invoking here.
How many years ago was that?
That's 136 years ago by my calculation. We'll ask one of our listeners. They'll do the math. But Apple is saying, well, you're not playing fair in a number of ways. And the feds are apparently insinuating that Apple has a special relationship with China. And Apple says, how is any of this germane to this case?
Also, and help me out, because this is the part I don't understand. And maybe that was that a sneeze? If that was a sneeze, God bless you. If it was just
a cough.
Why can't you say God bless you when you cough?
All right, I guess I can.
Well,
my question.
Yeah.
My question is that in all of this, we had an FBI official put his hand on a Bible and say, and said, well, we screwed up on this when we were looking at the phone and we were unable to lock it. So if they hadn't screwed up, they would have been able to get the information, presumably. So why is Apple still why are they still on Apple over this? Because they won't then help them because they screwed up?
Well,
I think Apple's trying to reassure its shareholders, frankly.
No, I don't think that's what it is. I think it's that this is a sort of conceptual fight. The details are less relevant than the idea that the government has a right, according to the government people, to go in and look at anybody's phones. I, for one, have always felt they're listening to every conversation I have, but who knows? And then that's a joke. And on the other side...
There is no joke.
Well, maybe there is no joke.
It's not a joke.
Okay. But on the I work with a congressman who would yell at Hoover on every phone conversation he had and say, J. Edgar, I know you're listening. I know you're listening.
And they got him, too, didn't they?
They did.
They sure did.
They did. So I think that's what's really going on here. And I think Apple, Ray, you make a point about the shareholders, but I think from Apple's point of view, they come out the hero in this. We're protecting your...
But they've already allowed it to happen so many times prior.
Yeah, but you're getting immersed in the details now. Details.
There was another case in Brooklyn. The federal government prosecutors say this has no bearing on this, but, and again, according to the New York Times, last week, in a separate but similar case in a Brooklyn courtroom, a magistrate rejected attempts by the Justice Department to force Apple to unlock an iPhone in a routine drug case, saying the government was using the All Writs Act so broadly that it might be unconstitutional. Apple says, well, look at this. The feds say, well, that doesn't have anything to do with this.
I don't know. You know, the feds have been going to, and so have the district attorneys, going to the magistrates and to the judges for years, getting permission to break into people's phones. I mean, it all seems so disingenuous to me.
We do.
I didn't actually read the entire article, but there was a link. The headline of which was Snowden says this whole business about the FBI not being able to unlock the iPhone is BS.
I've always said that.
Yeah.
Snowden and I.
That they know how.
Of course. I mean, that was the speculation on this program the day all this started.
That's interesting.
Yeah. We have a letter from a listener who asked the question of, does the panel have any opinions on President Obama not attending Nancy Reagan's funeral, that being customary? How do you all feel about that?
Who went from the administration? Did anyone go from the administration?
I think the funeral is today, correct?
It is.
Who went from the current administration?
I will find out.
All right. But the fact is,
the president is not going, and that was the question, yes.
So presidents have to go to funerals. I've always thought that in the specific writing on the vice president's duties,
right,
the vice president has to go to funerals.
Send Joe Biden. Right.
Would that have been difficult with the prime minister from Canada visiting?
Yeah, he had other things to do.
Well, Michelle Obama's going.
Oh, well, there you go. First lady goes. Big respects.
And the president will instead be attending South by Southwest.
Oh, really? Oh, that's not right.
I think it's right.
Oh, Hillary Clinton is expected to go.
Yeah, sure, that makes sense.
I believe the four first ladies, the four living first ladies.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Yes, yeah.
Very respectful.
Okay.
So we're not going to argue here.
No, it doesn't seem like we're going to argue.
Would that include Rosalind Carter?
If Rosalind Carter died, Obama would not have gone to South by Southwest. He would have gone to Rosalind Carter's. But we all make decisions, don't you? Have you ever skipped a funeral? I have. You know, that there are people who are friendly with you.
Why are you
not
laughing, Barbara?
There's just something about the tone and what you're saying, both of them combined. Have you ever skipped a funeral? Yeah. Funerals equal great sadness, tragedy.
Some of us don't go. And also, it depends.
Did you ever skip a cocktail party or a baseball game?
It depends on distance also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, somebody dies, you know.
California versus, although South by Southwest.
Oh, come on. Really?
Yeah. All right.
We're all sitting here with our mouths open.
All right.
At first, I thought you were referring to a Hitchcock movie, but now I know what you're talking about.
No, yes, yeah. I am. It's a festival.
It's a rave, whatever.
Great festival.
And then finally, in our last minutes this morning, as President Obama moves closer to choosing a Supreme Court nominee, Democrats appear to have settled on a conclusion. His best political play is the least political one. Rather than lobby him to choose a champion of liberal ideology or a symbolically historic appointment, many in the president's party have come to support his view that he should focus on finding a replacement for the late Justice Antonin Scalia, who has unchallenged legal credentials.
He, by the way, has got them. He's winning. It's all that simple. You know, this is intolerable. the Constitution is clear. The Senate has the right to say no, but they don't want to say no. So what he's going to do is find somebody. And I said this, by the way, let's at least admit this, Ray and Joe and Barbara. I said this on day one, that he would have to find somebody.
Moderate.
That he would have to find somebody who was moderate, but who in the end, I believe, will be on his side on certain of these key decisions. So in other words, he'll get somebody who has had a record, but in the judicial, but I suspect will end up, you know, making it 5-4 the other way in most cases.
And, I mean, there's a legacy thing too, right? I mean, he wants to leave his mark on the Supreme Court.
Which is into his entitlement.
Right. We're just about out of time. I want to thank all the people. We got a lot of letters on the funeral. Interesting.
Yeah, I knew we would. I knew we would. And just as Andrew said, first ladies always attend funerals of former first ladies. Sitting presidents never do. That's what Andrew said. All right. There you go.
All right.
Okay.
In the last 50 years, no sitting president has ever gone to the funeral of a first lady. The first lady always attends. There's no difference in this case. Look it up.
There you go.
Okay. All right.
Fine.
Okay. So we are.
And Paul says it's by invitation only, set up by Nancy herself. Is that possible?
I actually did. One of our my Facebook friends was invited to the funeral and put it on Facebook. Oh. And it's
a. They do a séance or something?
No, she makes a list on the way out.
They know.
They make a list on the way out. Speaking of being on the way out, yes, I'm on the way out.
We're all on the way out. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend. We'll be back with more show after that. Barbara, thank you for being the adult in the room.
The voice of reason.
You're listening. Hope things don't go too far south.
You're listening to the roundtable on WAMC.
Good luck, Barbara.